Welcome to the 3D Print Entrepreneur Podcast, hosted by Print That Thing, where we help you become a 3D print designer. I'm your host, JWall, and in today's episode, we'll be talking to Kevin from Product Design Online. Kevin is a designer, educator, and YouTuber who's eager to make CAD education accessible to the masses, to everyone. He has over 100,000 YouTube subscribers and runs a fantastic educational platform that teaches Fusion 360 to anyone who's interested. We had a great chat about his experience as an engineering student and the limited educational resources at the time. He also has some really great points about the industry and why he's focused his career on helping others learn design. Before we dive into the interview, let's get a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Print That Thing, an educational platform that helps you become a 3D print designer within 30 days. We provide easy-to-digest lessons that compound so you can learn fast. Sure, you can learn 3D print design on YouTube, but we teach a unique and flexible workflow not found anywhere else. You'll learn by doing, while creating 10 unique designs, giving you a strong foundation to get you 3D printing your own ideas. If you want to unleash your superpower of 3D print design, become a member at ptt.live for design, courses, and community. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we have one of my good buddies, Kevin, and he is with Product Design Online. Say what's up, Kevin.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Thanks for being here. For people who are just kind of getting to know you, obviously, you have a very, very popular YouTube channel and many other things, but kind of tell people what you do, what your mission is, and kind of how you got into 3D printing in general.
Yeah. So I guess I am most known for teaching Fusion 360. That's probably what most people, if they are familiar with me, that's why. But my general mission is to make CAD education accessible. So I'll give you kind of a quick short version of the story. So I was fortunate enough in my upbringing to learn different 3D modeling programs at a fairly young age compared to most people don't have access till college or later. Mm-hmm. So fast forwarding, I went to college for industrial design. And in my time there, we had to learn SolidWorks. And I had experience in Inventor and other similar programs in high school and prior. So switching to SolidWorks, you know, once you got kind of used to the different interface or quirks or nuances, it wasn't a big deal, right? It was kind of like, okay, another parametric program.
Where are the buttons? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But most of the other students had no prior experience. So it was a big kind of eye-opener for them. Mm-hmm. And as the story goes, the first day of class, the professor kind of got up and said to everyone, "Hey, I don't actually know this program. You're going to have to learn on your own. You're going to have to learn on YouTube," right?
Oh my gosh.
It's funny saying that now, because that is part of why I started posting on YouTube. But I also have to remind people that back then, this was like 2013.
Okay,
obviously, yeah. I've been around, but there wasn't as much education content, especially in this realm, like 3D modeling, right?
Oh, yeah. It was super early.
It was more like promo videos from like, you know, SolidWorks or something. And I wouldn't say any education really, or if there was, it was very bad. So most kids felt very, you know, left to fend for themselves. Like they just didn't know what to do. Right.
Right.
So I kind of naturally became the class TA, the unofficial TA of the class, because to me it was like, okay, I would get the homework assignment done in 10 minutes, struggling for hours.
Yeah. So and you probably learn more too, teaching them, because they say when you teach, you learn twice.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think, for me, it really reinforced what I did know at the time and where the gaps were for myself, like what I had to take my skill to the next level. Mm-hmm. So I should clarify, like I was by no means like a CAD pro at the time, but I had enough experience to like...
You had more than everybody else in the class.
Right. Yeah. So around that same time was when I first got introduced to 3D printing in school. So I think my freshman year of college, we had one or maybe two MakerBots. And at the time, our design building was kind of going this transition phase where they were going to remodel a lot of it. And so this 3D printing lab, which it's hard to call it a lab with only one or two machines, but it was tucked away in this kind of hidden corner room on the fourth floor where no student
just
even knew.
Dusty.
The only reason I heard about it is because my friend happened to work as a lab assistant in the building, and somehow, you know, he knew about it because of that, and it trickled down to me.
Wow.
So I went to hang out with him in there, and I was just blown away. Like, whoa, this is amazing, right?
Like, it's just sitting here.
Yeah. So I will never forget the very first thing that I printed was a skull, like this random skull model I found online. The most unnecessary, unfunctional, you know, object, like something I rarely would ever print now. Like I'm more for the utilitarian, like 3D prints.
Me too now.
But it was so fascinating. I still remember, like, cause I think we scaled it down, so it only took like an hour, hour and a half. And I remember I hung out there like the whole time, cause I was just so eager to pop that off the build plate
when
it
got done. Right?
And and seeing other people still today, like, go through that first, like, realization, the first time they see that 3D printer complete something, kind of reminds me of that, like, moment I had myself.
And even more so whenever when it's their design, you know?
Yeah, right. Right.
Like, even crazier.
That's kind of part of my, I think both of our goals, right? You with Blender, you with Fusion, but helping people have that ability and freedom to actually take what's in their head and it ends up there versus, you know, Thingiverse or Things or any of the 3D sites where you're just taking someone else's creation.
Right. Take what you get.
But let me finish off this story kind of in a fast way. So throughout my time in school, I ended up working in two other actual 3D print labs. One of which was just a number of MakerBots. I think we had like 18. And then at some point,
That sounds like a lot of headache.
Yeah. Well, we quickly realized that ourselves and transitioned the whole space to Ultimakers, which ended up being really well. The other 3D print lab I worked in was more of an engineering and design one on kind of the scale of like actual, like creating real products. And so we had access to like legitimate commercial, you know, Stratasys, HP, like really high-end machines.
Whoa. But
we also still had some of the cheap ones for like quick prototypes.
Right.
And so between those two resources and then still the printers in our design building, at that time, I think we had like Zortrax or something. They had moved on MakerBot too. I had access to pretty much anything you could hope for from a 3D printing realm, even some, you know, SLA machines. Like I think we had the earlier Form Labs and some, a few other.
Yeah. You had it all. You had it all, Kevin.
So I was very fortunate that I was kind of at the right place at the right time when 3D printing was really getting popular. Like that was kind of like at the peak of MakerBot before they're kind of, you know, drastic crack.
And you're in Seattle, right? For anyone listening, or is this the school in Seattle too?
No. So I went to school, University of Illinois in Champaign. I do live in the greater Seattle area now.
Cool.
But yeah, this was all in Champaign. But anyway, so yeah, fast forward. After school had been kind of involved in different maker spaces and stuff. I was living in Chicago at the time. And that's when I kind of had that urge to like teach Fusion again. I missed doing that because I also taught it in some school labs and different things throughout my time on campus. And I guess I also taught SolidWorks. So somewhere in there's this transition of starting to use Fusion more, which is a story for another day. But I then realized like my biggest frustration was with these in-person classes, it didn't scale. There was always more people that wanted to learn that could learn from we would always cap like classes at like 10, 15 people, you know, and you'd still have people that didn't show up last minute. Frustrations. So at the time I was kind of looking to step away from the makerspace I was involved in at the time, just for like other personal reasons. I decided like, hey, maybe I should just start posting on YouTube just to see if anyone even wants to see this online. Right.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
And you know, there was definitely some other channels out there, but I knew that they didn't have experience or a background in CAD. And so a lot of the stuff they were actually teaching was not really what I would consider a best practice or even what you should be doing. And even Fusion aside, just parametric programs in general.
They're just building bad habits.
Exactly. Yeah. And so part of my mission and kind of where I started was with the intent that making CAD education accessible isn't just about like helping you learn it. It's making sure you're able to learn kind of the professional level skills, these actual best practices or core concepts without having to go to college.
Right. So paying 50 grand plus.
So I tell people that to kind of full circle here and wrap up my story. I tell people, like, even if you go back to college or go to college for something like this, you may not learn it anyway, right?
Yeah, totally. You
know, the professor that says he doesn't know it. So you'll end up on one of our YouTube channels.
Yeah, yeah, totally. No, I went to film school and it was pretty much the same story. It's like, these teachers don't even make movies. Like they haven't made a movie in 15, 20 years. Like, they don't know, but we learned everything just by jumping on the sets on the weekend, just getting our hands dirty. So right. I'm right there with you. If you want to be an artist, you don't technically have to go to school. It's got to want to do it bad enough.
Yeah, no, totally.
So what is your, like, kind of your course creation process, or just your process in general when creating your lessons, or your, you know, how do you come up with your ideas or anything like that?
Yeah. So there's, I guess, kind of two distinct subsets. And I'll say that, so I run a YouTube channel and then I have, like, more in-depth courses on my website. Mm-hmm. I say there's different subsets because the overall process is the same, but with the idea or the start for each thing differs, because YouTube, I spend more time looking at data and, like, what are people searching for, right?
Right.
A lot of that is, like, very niche workflows or troubleshooting based stuff. Whereas on my website, the courses are more geared towards, like, hey, you can go from, like, knowing nothing of Fusion to getting to pretty intermediate or advanced, you know, concepts.
Cool.
In a professional level, like, where you can go and actually use these skills in a job somewhere, or to start your own business or whatever it may be.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I feel like a lot of the YouTuber viewers, maybe not everyone, but it seems like a lot of beginners, you know, I always think of, like, a younger crowd too, but that's cool. I want to take your classes too. I want to learn more Fusion. I've never really dove into Fusion, but I've watched a few of your classes. I watched your threading class, and that was really helpful just to, like, kind of see how Fusion handles everything. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that looks really powerful.
So I the only thing I'll say to that is, I think a lot of people, this is something that I'm still trying to figure out how to educate people on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are new to the world of 3D modeling in general, they don't realize that there's a big difference in mesh modelers like Blender and so on, and parametric modelers like Fusion and SolidWorks and Inventor and so on. Mm-hmm. And there is a very valuable need or will to have the skill set in both, I think.
I agree.
It depends on the person. You know, I think some people, if they have a very specific idea in mind, it's best for them to go one way or the other. But I find a lot of people struggle to understand that. And I've even encountered a number of people who were starting to learn Fusion when really they should have been on Blender.
I wonder that too. Yeah. When I jump into Fusion, cause I do want to, like, within the next year or so, like, if it'll be just like click, or if I'll be like, you know, cause I'm so used to kind of the free kind of art form with the Blender side of things.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say to that is, I always tell people, like, feel like you at least have a solid foundation in one before you try learning the other.
That's good advice.
If you try to learn both at the same time, you're really going to have it rough, because it is a different mental model and mind shift. And so when you go into that program, you have to keep that in mind and remember which kind of methodologies you're working with, right?
That's good advice. That's great. What do you think, like, so you've been in the printing industry for pretty, like, almost what, six, seven years. What is your favorite part of the industry? Like, tech, the design, the community, like, what kind of is strongest to you?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because there's so many different layers to it. For me, I think one is that there's a lot of opportunity in so many different industries. I think to a lot of, like, people who are just getting started with 3D printing, most people don't recognize how long it has been used in the commercial realm. You know, they think 3D printing was invented, you know, 2000s. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the first 3D printers were out like 40 years ago. I think the first, like, patent was issued.
Yeah.
A lot of people think, like, the FDM or FFF machines were first, but I believe it was actually the SLA machine,
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think the earliest time I've seen was like 87 when I was born, like 33 years ago.
Yeah. And so I think, and a lot of that was the cost, right? Like a lot of things became consumerized with the ability to make it affordable for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I think that's still the most exciting aspect because there is just so much going on behind the scenes that if you don't take the time to look for it or to really connect with different industries or people, you probably will never even hear about it. You know, we start to see a lot more of like, oh, 3D printed concrete houses or like, kind of like the viral type things.
Yeah, but the bridges. Yeah.
There's even more stuff going on that doesn't get shared because either companies don't want it to be shared
or
because of other things. Right. And so that to me is most exciting because I think a lot of people that get into it for hobbyist reasons don't realize how much opportunity there is to either start a business around it or to get involved with a company that's already doing it, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of what I want to help with is just anyone who's listening out there, like who wants to make 3D design or 3D print design, more or less their career. Like you can do that. Like, I feel like coming from me, I was like, I don't see a lot of people doing it or even talking about it, but even just doing this podcast, just meeting different designers and people like you that are like, they're doing it, you know? And it's just, I just wanted to be able to share this kind of like dream with everybody so that they know they can do it. You just got to start learning and start making your designs. Well, where do you think the actual, like what do you think the future will be? Like, what do you think it will be like in 5 years? Or you can go as far into the future as you want, but like, what do you hope the future of 3D printing is like?
I think, that's another great question. I think it's again kind of split. Like you have the hobbyist sector and then you have like this commercial sector.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the commercial sector, you know, we're going to continue seeing what's kind of been happening in the last couple years, especially like advancements in like metal and other materials that really push the boundaries of the end result. And I think a lot of that revolves around like actual production manufacturing. You know, in the commercial sector, a lot of 3D printing is used for real production, but a lot of it is also still used just for prototyping or other purposes. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of stuff that's kind of coming together between technologies like generative design and software and cloud computing getting better, right? So to me, the most exciting part there is the realization that in another couple of years, even some of that stuff will be in places where even a few years ago that could have never happened because the technology wasn't, you know, there. It didn't catch up with it.
Whoa. Yep. Either adapt or die.
Yeah, exactly. On the flip side, I think, you know, the hobbyist sector, I really don't think a lot of people think, you know, in a couple of years, oh, everyone's going to have one in their garage and they're going to print the part, you know, I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
Within the next 5, even 10 years. To me, it really all comes back to the materials and the actual, you know, final output.
Mm-hmm.
I do think at some point in our life, we'll be able to go to an AutoZone and they may print a custom part instead of having all these different, you know, things in stock right there.
Or have
there.
To wait for it to ship a few days. Yeah.
Right. They may say, hey, come back in 4 hours.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You know, yeah.
I think that there's definitely potential there, but again, there's a lot of variables and things we're waiting to like catch up technology and material wise.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a hobbyist standpoint, the last thing is that I think more and more people will get into it for different reasons other than just like the final output of a 3D printed plastic object.
Yeah, it's like a problem solving machine.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing me and you align with well is this idea of 3D printing does not have to be the final output. Like this could be your way to iterate on the design. It could be a way to maybe you print one little piece and then everything else is made in other materials or traditional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, there's so many different.
I've seen people a lot of doing with that with furniture. Like they'll print the pieces and then they'll run dowel rods and stuff to make little chairs and tables. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's where in the next couple of years, especially, that sector will grow a lot. We'll start to see more companies and ideas that, you know, revolve around the idea of like, hey, you can purchase this kit from us. We'll send you the nuts and bolts and a few other things that shouldn't be 3D printed. You'll print out a couple pieces and maybe you'll pick up some pieces from a local hardware store and you'll put it together, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this hybrid of like, you know, there's still value in you getting something from the company, but you're able to kind of put your creative influence on it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I've seen things with IKEA. They're kind of dabbling in some 3D printed parts. So it seems like they're kind of experimenting with that type of idea to some degree.
Yeah, one of my favorite, let's see if I can look this up. I think it's called Edelkrone.
Say it again.
Edelkrone, I think is what Edelkrone. It's called. Uh-huh. E-D-E-L-K-R-O-N-E.
Okay.
They make high-end camera equipment, but they, like a few years ago, made a few products where you would buy a kit and you would 3D print the parts. They would send you the STL files, you 3D print them, and then a few days later, right, your nuts and bolts arrive and you piece it together. That's and like cool. bearings cool. and stuff that, you know, you wouldn't want printed.
I did that with 360 cameras because I've come from a film background. So that's actually what got me into 3D was making camera gear and stuff. So I love that.
Yeah, which I love that example because traditionally a lot of that equipment is insanely priced, right?
It's a very expensive hobby. Yeah.
$1,200 like this camera jig just to make the camera slide, right?
Yeah.
But now if you make it for $100 because you're getting 3D printing components, like that's huge. It's all about accessibility.
Yep. They got to adapt. So where do you go? And just for any people listening, like, I know you're very busy creating courses and building platforms and everything. It's a lot to do, but where is there any artists that you are inspired by or places you go to get inspiration? I know you said you did woodworking before when we talked once before, right? So do you feel like you get a lot of inspiration from woodworking or kind of go off of that?
Yeah. So I don't think of any off the top of my head, like 3D printing specific designers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few kind of famous designers that I've always admired and got influenced by. You know, the classics like Dieter Rams and Charles and Ray Eames, like all the famous chairs and things like that.
I'll have to look it up.
I think probably the one that's less common, one of my favorites is Karim Rashid, who's a designer. I think he's based out of New York now, but he's probably one of the most global designers I've seen from like an industrial design standpoint. He does anything from furniture to mass like products like the Method, like soap bottles.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
High-end hotels. Like he dabbles in like everything.
He's just a designer, period. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reason I've always resonated with him is because he's always followed, you know, the idealistic utilitarian approach of like form follows function.
I like that.
But I think he more than any other modern designers has pushed that to where beauty and kind of the sex appeal of it is still a huge part of the final design. And like even like that's if you beautiful. Look at the Method bottles, I think that's probably the most common example I can think of that everyone would probably have seen at some point.
Oh yeah.
Like they sold more of the soap bottles than anything else, not because of the soap being anything special, but because of the appearance of the bottle.
Yeah. And yeah. It comes back to the design. Yes.
And I like that type of stuff excites me because I think a lot of people who are new to 3D modeling or 3D design, or even just 3D printing or things in general, they forget how big of a role that the design actually plays, you know, a part of it, right? Whether or not some people adopt that product or actually use it.
Yeah. And next time you're anyone listening, walking through the store, the hardware store, just know that some designer out there somewhere made every single thing you're looking at in the entire store. And that's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to frame it.
It's like, dang. So there's definitely room for more designers, guys and girls out there. So what in the long term, like, is there anything like crazy or cool or something like you mentioned, furniture and stuff. Would you ever be interested in like 3D printing furniture or 3D printing like cars or anything like insane? Like, is there anything in your pipeline or your future you would like to do like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think if I had,
but yeah, if you had no budget, you know, you just had in like a huge printer in your garage or something.
Well, actually I'll frame it in a realistic way. Cause I think it's not about if I had the time, it's about making, you know, changing priorities. I think when I get to a point where right now I'm too dedicated to building up this platform.
Right. And it takes a long time. Yeah.
A way to learn Fusion. I think when that gets to a point where I feel like you know, and actually the challenge with that is Fusion, like any software, is always updating. So there's,
oh my gosh. Yeah. You're always one step behind, one step forward.
But especially with Fusion, because it gets updated every month, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think Blender like updates every month too. It's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I think once all, like, there's enough courses that I feel like people have enough depth to go through, like they can really get this like collective, like, oh my God, I went from nothing to like, I can 3D model essentially anything because I know how to approach it now.
Yeah. You know how to think. Yeah. You're teaching them, you're just building them with skills.
Yeah. I think then I'll feel comfortable shifting more of my time and focus into some, like a project like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I think if I could pick something today,
yeah, what would it, yeah, house design or like,
it would probably be 3D printing furniture or something on a large scale with the intent that I'm not just 3D printing like giant plastic objects. I'm using it as one method with woodworking or concrete or other materials to push the boundaries of what was capable before.
Yeah.
I think like for me, that's where 3D printing is so powerful. A lot of people forget that you can come up with an object that probably couldn't be created in any other or most other manufacturing methods. But on the flip side, I'm not as keen to like, you know, oh, I'm going to 3D print this bench that would have been better off in wood.
Right. Right. Just using what it's calling for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I dig that. What advice would you have for anyone starting out, whether they want to be like start doing tutorials or if they wanted to did their own platform and train people, or if they wanted to just start designing in general, like what advice would you wish somebody would have gave to you when you were starting out?
I think the number one thing, regardless of whether it's trying to do tutorials or start like a 3D printing business or anything, is to start small and with a niche. And the reason always falls back onto that helps you remain hyper-focused on what you're actually trying to do, what problem you're trying to solve. And so that's why I tell people like today, I could be teaching SolidWorks and Fusion and
Blender and
right, yeah. 10 other problems. But yeah. At the end of the day, everything would be so just, you know, barely scratching the surface. It wouldn't really give value to anyone. You know, I already feel like I can't keep up with Fusion, you know, just teaching that in general. So
I know that.
Yeah. And doing, you know, multiple things.
Definitely.
But I think no matter what you do, if you keep that in mind, like start small and understanding that, you know, you can have a 5-year, 10-year plan of how you would expand to other, you know, categories or subsets. Mm-hmm. But even if it's just a 3D printing business, like start by making, you know, camera equipment or a specific niche where you can build a customer base. And then once you get the revenue flowing and you get money or, you know, other resources, you can easily expand into others and you'll have other experience to lean on.
Right. Right. So have you ever worked with clients or do you ever take on clients? Like, or did you in the past or anything like that? Or would you recommend someone taking on like design prototype clients?
Yeah. So I still do client work. So most of my 3D printing kind of client work is more prototyping. So mm-hmm. a lot of it is helping customers either get stuff ready for manufacturing or for getting like patents or other kind of like, you know, they kind of have the idea and things are at a certain point, right?
Right.
Like finalized, they need the help getting, you know, the home stretch.
Gotcha.
I like to say, I don't typically work with someone if like they just came to me and said, hey, I have this idea. I think it's a cool invention. Like, can you help me make it? Right.
Right. Right.
And there's kind of two reasons for that. One is typically that idea is either not truly vetted yet and it's not worth my time.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, if someone hasn't invested in that much time themselves, it's usually not going to go very far.
You right. know. They're like, I want you to do it though. It'll be, yeah. Right. They're like,
in my experience. So the lesson I would tell people there is if anyone ever tells you or asks you to help for equity or something else, you should probably be running in the other direction.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine call me from LA and he's like, dude, I got this great idea. You know, it's going to be great. And like, I know he knows a lot of people and is very connected. And then he's like, but we don't want to spend that much or really anything up front, but we'll totally have it on the back end. And I was like, I'm good. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I might not be your guy. Yeah. I'm kind of a more 50 up front, you know, like let's get it on the table and go.
Yeah, no, that's a lesson that all entrepreneurs go through at some point.
Definitely.
They have to have that moment. I think everyone goes through at least one experience where they accept that anyway, because the conscious tells them, what if it turns out
right,
well?
Right. And it could.
But I think most people get burned and they realize, you know, mm-hmm. okay, moving forward, this is not, you know, viable or sustainable for long term.
Definitely. Yeah. If you remember anything from today, no, be careful. What about, let's see. Well, so if someone wants to learn Fusion or just, you know, work with you, what's the best way for them to find you or get in contact with you or see what you're doing or take your classes and stuff like that?
Yeah. So all of my classes are on productdesignonline.com. Mm-hmm. So I have what I refer to as the PDO Academy, for short. So if you sign up for the Academy, you get access to all the courses, not just like one-off courses. There's also, I have a newer community space. That was one of the things that I learned early in my kind of teaching online, was one of the biggest disconnects or reasons people struggle with online learning is they don't have that ability to kind of raise their hand or lean on support or things like that. And I've always been very big on even my YouTube tutorials. For the first year and a half, I responded to every single comment.
Yeah, that's great.
That person should be able to get unstuck or get help, you know, whenever they need it. Yeah, now, obviously, yeah. That doesn't scale.
Right. You have hundreds of thousands of, like tons of comments every day.
The time I finally like accepted that, I was probably spending an hour or 2 hours every day trying to respond and keep up. And it was not worth it.
You'd have to hire someone almost.
Yeah. And I also realized that like I started repeating myself a lot. And so by building out this community space, as well as like more documentation and kind of troubleshooting articles.
That's smart.
My goal is to help get people unblocked as soon as possible, but to make sure that when they go through that process of getting past that kind of learning roadblock, they actually recognize themselves, you know, how they got there. So that way, if they get, you know, in front of another kind of learning hurdle,
right,
they have that willpower to kind of do it themselves.
That's awesome.
I think that's what I found a lot of online courses do wrong is the intent of like, they either one have no support at all. Like you're basically just like, you're on your own.
Right.
Or they solve every single problem and you make it actually harder for that person to learn because you're not actually letting them go through that process.
Right. The learning process. Yes, definitely. That's great.
But to answer the rest of your question, so pretty much can contact me through the website for any client work. Lately I've been busy enough. Taking on much, just because I have too much on my plate as right. is.
Me either.
But yeah, I'm sure you know how that is. But yes. I think, like the other thing that I'll point out is part of my mission to making CAD education accessible, you know, on one hand, I have to have a viable business and have to charge, you know, for stuff.
Right. But your time, your talent. Yeah, your skills.
I'm also very adamant about giving away as much resources as possible. So those maybe aren't in a stance that they can afford even a single course can still learn at least some of the core entry-level concepts.
That's beautiful.
So on my YouTube channel, I have a lot of training stuff that you can really go through from nothing and have at least a solid foundation of Fusion. I will say one disclaimer, a lot of the older videos are the old Fusion 360 interface. So some people find that to be a struggle. I've actually found, to my surprise, a lot of folks actually comment the fact that although it's a struggle at first, it actually helps them because, again,
it's like a little quiz,
that little learning hurdle, they have to make sure they can figure it out themselves. And so not only do those concepts stick and get retained better, But a lot of times people end up digging further and learning something that maybe I didn't show in that video.
You know, that's great. And it's, I mean, it literally is almost impossible to keep up with the software. And it'll probably just keep getting faster and faster as time continues and technology advances. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, at some point we'll probably have platforms that take our jobs and, you know, teach the
hopefully
software.
Let's let the robots do all the work. That's what sometimes when I'm printing things, I'm like, all right, I'm working technically, like the robots are all doing, I've set them all up to go. Apparently, like in the future, I mean, well, already we're getting AI and stuff into our design softwares, but I think that's going to be cool. I know a lot of people are scared of AI, but I think it's going to be cool when like us as designers, we're like creative, but we're also using super powerful AI plugins that can make us do things even better than we thought we could think of on our own. I'm kind of excited for that phase.
Yeah, I think the coolest opportunity there is the fact, you know, I'll agree with you that a lot of people have that fear of
the robots,
you know, the robots taking over. I think what most people often don't see or forget is that it's actually about the numbers or how much can be generated, right? And it all comes back to time. So like with Fusion 360 right now, if you use the generative design workspace, mm-hmm. have it generate 200 ideas in 30 minutes, right?
Oh my gosh.
If you actually spent the time to do that, that would have taken you 6 months, probably, maybe right. even longer. And right. so it really comes back to the designer actually has more power to get from point A to point B, and they're going to get much further than they ever would, you know, in a shorter amount of time. So I think that's great. Exciting from an AI.
Definitely. All right. I want to play a game with you. So I'm just going to run two words, like a word association, and then just kind of pick one or you can pass. Ready?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So PLA or TPU?
PLA.
Okay. FDM or SLA?
FDM.
3D scan or 3D model?
3D model.
Supports or no supports?
Supports.
STL or OBJ or other?
I'll say other.
Okay. What's the other? What is that?
I would say step file.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Step file. Of course. Precision modeling or sculpting?
Precision. Definitely.
Prusa slicer or Cura slicer?
I want to say both, but if I really had to choose, I would say Cura.
Okay. Yeah. My Mini Factory or Colts 3D?
I honestly don't use either, so
I'll pass. Shapeways or 3D hubs? I know the answer to this.
Maybe not.
3D hubs, yeah. Practical design or decorative design?
Definitely practical.
Yeah. Digital download or print on demand?
What do you mean by print
like on- would you maybe would you rather like sell a digital product? Or like step files or STLs, or would you rather print that product on demand?
Oh, gotcha. Definitely the STL, digital download.
And sell a product or take on a client?
Sell a product.
Yeah, that's great. That's all the questions I have for today. Thanks for coming on the show with us today. I appreciate your feedback and your advice and just your good vibes.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, thanks again. Everybody, make sure you go check out his website. And is it productdesignonline.com or I feel like I typed in pdo.com or something. Did I do that?
No. I would love to buy that domain, but it's like a right now. So.
Yeah. In time. So yeah. Product Design Online.
Yeah. Productdesignonline.com.
.com. Yeah. Cool. Thank you all so much for listening with us today. And again, thanks to Kevin for joining me. If you're interested in jumping into Fusion 360, check out productdesignonline.com. Kevin's got a fantastic platform of designers learning new stuff all the time. Be sure to check in next week. We'll be talking to Pierre from Colts3D.com to discuss the early days of building the platform and a few tips and tricks on posting there in 2021. While you're waiting, remember you can get a Print That Thing membership over at ptt.live so you can start 3D printing your own ideas. I'm Jaywall, and as always, keep creating.